Good afternoon, and welcome to Fire Engineering's Hump Day Hangout. As you all know, first Wednesday of every month, the instructors from Traditions Training and the ISFSI get together, and we talk shop on training at all levels. From the top down, we talk training and get deep into it. So we're happy to be here, excited to talk about some subjects that are pretty important to us. And before we get started with the content, and I'm not sure if Chief Halton's going to be jumping on today. He's on the road and whatnot, but if he does, I'll make sure we have time for him to say hi and whatnot. As always, we thank Fire Engineering for the time to really dive into something that we are all very passionate about, and that is training in the fire service. So before we get started with the content today, we'll do some introductions around the table. Start over with Tony Carroll. Go ahead, sir.
Let's figure out my phone. Hey, Tony here. Just got promoted to Deputy Chief here in Louisa County, Virginia. It's going to be in charge of operations. So pretty excited about that. And glad that I could make this month's hangout. I haven't been on in a couple months, so it's good to be here.
Okay, I'm glad to have you back, sir. Ray, go ahead, sir.
Hey, how you doing? Ray Edwards with Traditions Training. Working in Washington, D.C. Fire Department, and I'm currently assigned to the Special Operations Battalion, and I am the Battalion Fire Chief Aide. I've been there for 15 years and with Traditions a little over 10 now, and just love to be a part of these conversations with you guys and pick your brains and try to learn something from you.
Awesome. Great to have you, sir. Brian Zaitz, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, Brian Zaitz, currently Assistant Chief Kirkwood Fire Department in St. Louis, Missouri, second Vice President of the ISFSI, International Society of Fire Service Instructors, and excited to talk about that training element today with everyone. So looking forward to it.
Same here. And as a special guest, we do have Nick Morgado from Miami-Dade Fire Rescue. We brought him on. I've known Nick for some time now, almost, I think, 2 decades at this point. We've run in the same circles here in training for a long time in the South Florida area. And I think that's why mainly I brought him on, because I just wanted a really good representation from South Florida. I haven't seen him in a while. And when we started talking about this topic, he was one of the first people that came to my mind. So Chief Morgado, please, introductions.
Very good. Thank you, Chief Shaw. As you said, Nick Morgado, Miami-Dade Fire Rescue, 19 years, and currently serving as the Division Chief of Training, and just happy to be here.
All right. So one of the things we were talking about as we were kind of figuring out what to do for the content for today is we were kind of backtracking with all the training we had done in the past year. And we came up with a lot of topics on previous Hump Day Hangouts. We were talking about critical factors for firefighter training, health and fitness, decision-making, mentoring, outside-in fires, complacency. We've been all around the globe. Really good conversations. And, of course, those are available on Hump Day Hangout, the website. You can easily look back to some of those. But one of the things we haven't talked about in a little bit is the training for a recruit firefighter, that training during that first year. So that's what we're going to kind of focus on today. And when we think about this, and we were talking about this before we jumped on the podcast today, is the importance of that first year, that ridiculous importance of that first year and how much training they get. You know, we talked about how we always put so much time and energy into these people we hire. I mean, they're literally our long-term investments. We put in hours and tons of dollars into it for a person that's going to be there for 20, 30, maybe 40 years. So we put a lot of work into that. And they're putting their first foot forward. They're putting their best selves forward. We see their first impressions. On the flip side, once they start with us, whichever agency we involve, whether it's volunteer, paid, what have you, it's our time to have our first impression shown to them. So they get to see us. They get to see, is this the place I signed up for? Do they have their stuff together? In their mind, they're thinking this. And usually is, most of the time across the board, the trainers, the training bureau, the training division, some sort of trainers that have that first impression. So we're representing our departments, we're representing everything about our departments as our training program progresses, whether it's communication, content, how that matches up from now into the field. So these are things we'd like to talk about today, getting a brief snapshot of what some of the individuals here do for their training and how they maximize that. We're gonna follow that up with a little bit of talk about how to make sure we match up what we're training in training academies or in content and making sure that matches with the street. And then at the end, okay, your year's coming close to being done. How do you know that person is ready to hit the streets? What data have you collected? What have you seen? How do you validate that person? All that work you've put into from the academy, whether it's a day long or 6 months, their time in the field, and that 1 year mark hits, how do you know that you're comfortable with that person hitting the field, ready to go? So that's kind of how we'll start this. And before we dive into the content, just a reminder, if you have questions, FE Talk, hashtag FE Talk, that's Foxtrot Echo Talk on Twitter. You can throw in some questions, they'll pop in on our board and we'll go and respond to those. But to dive into this, and again, Nick, I'm going to start with you because I'd love to kind of hear and pick your brain on this. We'll start with the first impression thing. I mean, I guess the question is, you know, what does your department down there look like? And give us a snapshot of what your initial training looks like. And after that, how do you maximize that in terms of training, that first impression? How do you maximize that training to make sure that when they hit the, at least the first year part in the field on the job, that they're set up for success? What does that look like for you?
All right. Once again, thanks for inviting me. As far as what our recruit training program looks like, and it's changed quite a bit over the past several years, and even when I was in recruit school. So right now, as it stands, we have a 14-week program for certified firefighters that come in, and then it'll be slightly longer, almost close to 10 months if we're hiring a class that is going to be non-certified, and that looks a little bit different because we have a partnership with a local community college for that. But as far as our SOP training or maximum standards training that are for our newest firefighters, it's 14 weeks. When it comes to first impressions are absolutely huge. And you get the nail on the head. The instructors are getting the first impression of that new employee or that new recruit, just as that new recruit is, you know, getting a first impression of what the program is, what the department is, and what we're all about. And I'd say the program really speaks for itself through the professionalism of the instructors, how organized we are with the time that we have with them, that it's structured and remains structured and don't get the impression that it's going to be wavering or all over the place, and setting that clear expectation on the front end of what it is we expect for them to do and what we expect out of them over this course of 14 weeks to get them day one ready. Their training is going to go long beyond that, but having that clear expectation and make sure that we have their commitment, that they put their very best into the program so they get the maximum out of it. And that being structured, organized, professional, that basically the program's tight and that it's not going to waver all over the place and wishy-washy really goes a long way from our perspective of really setting that tone out of the gate.
All right. I like what you said.
Hey, I have a question real quick for both Steve and you, Nick. Florida, I thought Florida, you had to come in with training, right? You go to a college or something and you get the firefighter training and then you get hired by a place. Is that different for, I mean, I know you two are big agencies in Florida. Is that different for you guys?
So basically, you know, you're right. In the South, especially in the South Florida area and throughout Florida, you go to the fire academy, you go to EMT school. Most of the time you're going to paramedic school, especially in the South Florida area. You come onto the job and then the different departments put you through different time frames of training, whether that's 1 day or 10 weeks. You know, when I started in Deerfield Beach 22 years ago, my I didn't have any training. They put me right onto the job day one and everything was on the job as opposed to what we're doing now, which is 10 weeks in our area. And
yeah, because I heard him say 14 weeks and I was really surprised that a recruit school would be so short, right, for a large agency like Miami-Dade. Again, you know, I'm familiar with DC and we're topping 24, but we're teaching them from nothing, right? And they get firefighter 1-2, EMT, and so on. But you guys are already, you're really just indoctrinating them in Fort Lauderdale or Miami-Dade, right?
So I'll let Nick follow this up, but I will say on this, yes, to a certain extent, and they come in with a basic level of training. So they go to minimum standards, let's say, and wherever they go in Florida. So when they're coming to us, they've been through the basic academy. That being said, now it's time to make sure we are validating that training. Do they really know how to force doors? Do they know how to throw ladders? Do they put on their gear, the bunker, the way the specific department wants them to know their gear? So they come in with a little bit, but a lot of it is validation. So a lot of the departments are 2 weeks, 3 weeks of training, 4 weeks and some. It varies between the departments in the Broward County area. I know Nick has the advantage of having at least 14. As you go up in the states or up in the counties, it kind of changes. But yeah, so the answer to your question, yeah. But Nick, did you want to say anything about yours?
So I'll round it out and pretty much to echo what Chief Shaw already has. So there's two paths to get hired with Miami-Dade, as well as some other departments in South Florida. You can be the certified route, which means they've already attended a fire academy somewhere within the state of Florida, or got reciprocity from another state that came in and is already certified firefighter 1 and 2, and is an EMT or paramedic. So we hire them already as an EMT paramedic and a firefighter 2, and we put them through a 14-week program. We also will hire them with non-certified, so they don't come with anything firefighter 1, 2, EMT, or paramedic, and then we will put them through Miami-Dade College, the fire academy that we have there, as well as EMT, and then they will start their 14-week program. So it's roughly about 10 months to get them from zero all the way up to at least EMT firefighter riding on the truck.
Yeah, no, I just want to wrap this up, but you guys are at a I think you're at a distinct advantage, right? Again, I know in my time at the training center, we went from, we hired some medics, paramedics who were already certified, or we had, guys off the street. And again, right, if they took the time to get paramedic, then they probably have a work ethic and so on, which really helped with that recruit process. Same thing for Florida, right? If they're going to go to those basic standard schools across the state, that says a lot about their desire, right? And that they'll put that forth. And then there's probably a pretty good hire for you guys. I'm jealous, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Hey Nick, don't feel bad that he's jealous. It's the training and the weather. They're all jealous of. So it's just what we have to deal with. It just happens. Let me kick this over to Brian. Brian, same question. Snapshot of what it looks like over there, and how do you maximize that first impression when it comes to training?
So St. Louis County is unique. We have 88 companies divided up into 43 fire departments in St. Louis County. So it's a unique system. Our fire academy is a 14-week fire academy, which is just firefighter 1 and 2. And then they come on the job at various departments or districts in St. Louis County. They usually, before they even go to the fire academy, typically will have an EMT license or a paramedic license. So then they get on the job. And then, of course, it's the job of the department or district or the crew, if you will, to then indoctrinate them to the culture of whatever fire department or district they hired at. And so, that's the end goal, is that, to your point, and when Tony brought up a good point, certified versus trained, and we could talk probably days on that topic, but show them how we do things in St. Louis County. We have SOPs and things that we all follow with automatic aid. So it is a unique system, but that 14 weeks sets the foundation for them in terms of how the fire department is to be, the foundation of which they will build for the rest of their career. So we take it pretty serious at our fire academy.
That's good to hear. And, you said a couple words there: culture, indoctrination, foundation. Those are strong words. And everything that you said right there is what we do that first year. We're trying to basically build something that's going to last an entire career. And that's what they're seeing first. So yeah, I dig what you're saying. Raymond, what's it look like in your neck of the woods up there?
So I'm going to try to stay away from the training academy end of it. I think everyone knows pretty much what happens at the training academy. There's different lengths, talking about 10 weeks, 4 weeks, 24 weeks, if you're in DC, pretty much, everyone's getting certified to those levels. It depends on what is actually happening after that certification. I think it's really going to make that rookie year. We've all seen that you go to a firehouse. I especially see it now more that I'm driving a chief around doing rounds. You get to a firehouse and the first thing you do is you open that door and everyone's got their feet kicked up. It's a mess. And you look, well, these guys are getting a rookie the next day. He's like, he's going along for a long road. So, I think the biggest part of that rookie year is that firehouse training. The culture in that firehouse is what's going to set them up for their career. If you have a crew that's drilling all the time, whether it's an area drill, pumping, throwing ladders, that probationer is going to be better off. You're going to get your hooks in them and they're going to want to learn. They're going to do more because that's just the culture of what's going on there. Then if you get to the firehouse where they have their feet kicked up, it's going to be a culture shock later on when they get transferred or move somewhere else. And now you have a crew that wants to drill. So I think the biggest thing is we need to focus on getting training in the firehouse and ensuring the crews are constantly training. recently in DC, we've switched from more of the officer in that company doing the constant training to evaluations constantly going through. So now instead of their normal battalion chief or company officer doing their monthly evaluation, we'll send them back down to the training academy every once in a while. It's not only giving an idea of the training staff, how the probationer is developing, but also what the crew is doing. If the probationer comes back and completely bombs the evolutions at the training academy, they can look back and say, well, maybe the crew needs some more training too, and we can adjust things a little bit and really look into what the problem is.
So, and thank you for that. And you hit the nail on the head when we're talking about the training that happens at the firehouse. And that's going to bring us into the next topic of conversation. I'm glad you mentioned that, because you're right. There is a certain consistency that happens at the one point, or inconsistency in some levels. But when they hit the firehouse, that's the next part of it. You know, what training are they getting, or what lack of training are they getting, or is the same? Is it the same at A and B, the B and C shift? There's a lot of variables there. Tony, you have an interesting position, I guess, because of switching over. You've seen it from one side, now you're seeing it from another side. So same question to you in terms of that initial training and that that first impression. You know, what's that look like now for you?
Yeah, we are such a small agency, and we're looking for already trained people, right? So we just yesterday had a practice session for our upcoming entrance exam. So it was a physical agility practice, right? And there was several people who showed up, a couple of them that didn't have any fire service experience at all. Now we will put them through training, right? We'll get them EMT and firefighter 1-2 and so on. And we did that with the last group. With the last group we hired five people, and some of them had varying degrees of training. So we had to get a couple of them through firefighter 2, a couple of them through EMT, then everybody through driver operator. So it was a mishmash of that. You know, it gets us somebody who's already got some training. So we're not sending them away for a 6-month academy. However, right, and the good thing about a 6-month academy, at least it used to be, you used to be able to kind of indoctrinate them into how you're operating. And now I know, you know, it kind of gets to be a hands-off kind of thing and you know, get them through. So anyways, we're not getting that 6-month kind of indoctrination. We're getting them a few months, but even the firefighter 2 class that we did, you know, that was 2 nights a week and a weekend. So the guy was going to his workstation in the daytime or on his shift. Then at night he would do the training. So, I mean, we're getting a varying degree of people that came from lots of different places. So, you know, we're not getting the recruit school academy, which we really would be a nice thing. This next session, we just got a safer grant. So we're going to hire about 12 people, which is a big chunk of our department. Starting in January, we are going to have a, you know, more of a recruit school style class. Definitely, you know, the first 4 weeks, 8 weeks will be EMT. And then we'll get into some firefighter 1 and 2 and that kind of thing. So, it's bad because I don't know, you know, when if they came from some place in Virginia that didn't have very good training and we get them, but they've got firefighter 1, you know, we check that box. So, but I don't know what they really have. So now it becomes, you know, it get them in the firehouse, but it's almost like an OJT, which is, I don't know. We're kind of behind the eight ball, you know, with that, putting them right into the fire from the frying pan, right? And I don't know that it's the best way, but it's what we're doing now and what we're working with. So again, I'm we need to get, you know, some procedures in place. This is what we want. Just like, you know, maybe this month we're working on this with all of our recruits that came out. This month we're doing that. So we haven't got there yet, but I really think we will.
Okay. All right. So this brings up a good part of the discussion. And I think that you guys may have, and I'll just give you a snapshot of where we're at in Fort Lauderdale in our areas. And this is just something that we've kind of seen recently. And I'm glad that some of our recent Hump Day Hangout episodes, we talked about mentorship. We just came to the realization that because of everything that we're teaching our folk, all the content, from just everything from the fire to EMS now to bits and pieces of TRT, structural collapse, dive, bike medics, airboats, helicopters, there's so much we're asking that we've realized that we could not do this without some sort of mentorship program to couple what we were doing in training. And I don't want to kind of get off on the mentorship track, but I will tell anybody's listening, please go back and look at some of those recent Hump Day Hangouts on mentorship, because I think that most people can agree we're asking more of our personnel today than we ever have. Chances are whatever we did 20, 30 years ago for us, that level right here is this today. I mean, I think we've all seen that. So just the amount of stuff we're asking for them is incredible. But to tandem off something I'm not sure who said it, but getting the day one ready and whatnot, I think that a lot of us have probably heard this. Okay, well, you guys are just getting done with training. Welcome to the field. Now let me show you how it's really done. I think we've probably heard that statement here and there, or you guys have heard that out in your various departments. In other words, is there a disconnect between what's being taught in training and what's being done in the field? So I guess I'm going to reverse this. I'm going to go back, start with Tony, and kind of go backwards here. But how do you counter that? In other words, how do you go about making sure that, one, the people in the field know what the training is that they're coming out with, so they're comfortable with that level? And two, how do you make sure that the training you're teaching matches what they're seeing in the street, so you don't have to answer that question like, well, why are you teaching them this? We're doing this. But Tony, what are your thoughts on that?
I'd like to have that, Steve. Like I said, you know, we're really early in this. We're hiring guys who have already got training. So now you're right. I need to make sure that they can pull our lines, that they can, you know, stretch our stuff, they can throw our ladders, they can operate our fire trucks. So there needs to be, and I don't have that. So that's what, this is good for me. This Hump Day Hangout today is going to be good, so we can start to get this going. Because this place, again, they've kind of always hired those already trained, and you get a hodgepodge of stuff. So, you know, going forward, as we start to add more and more people, and maybe get some, you know, we have a combination system. So the rigs are set up a little bit different. So as we start to get more and more career in, you know, maybe we'll start doing some standardization, so we can then also standardize our training. Right. So this month, everybody's doing this. I mean, I am trying to do, you know, Mondays we're doing Mayday training. Tuesdays we're doing truck stuff. Wednesdays we're doing water stuff. Thursdays we're doing, you know, tactical Thursdays, and so on. So at least we can have some kind of a calendar for that. And it's not just a, you know, shotgun blast on what we're going to train on. But this is early in my career here. And as we move forward, to get some kind of standardization on what we're going to train the people.
I think you mentioned standardization. That's a big word, because not only standardization between what training's doing in the field, but standardization on the trucks, standardization on the shifts. As an assistant chief over an entire department, it's frustrating sometimes when A shift does it differently than B shift, it does it differently than C shift. You know, how do you make sure and manage that? Going back to Ray, and you mentioned this, that firehouse training, that's where it's at. Whatever they learn here, whatever, but when the rubber meets the road in that firehouse, that's where it's at. So kind of the same question, you know, how do you make sure that the training is matching up from what they've been trained, and how do you coordinate with that in terms of making the street match what they've been taught? What are your thoughts on that?
I think, first off, here, if a guy says, or whoever in the firehouse is saying, well, you know, this is where we're going to show you the right way to do something, it's kind of unsettling for me to hear that, and some of the other the guys at work, just because all our recruits are not coming from a municipal academy. It's our own academy. We should be teaching them the way that it's done from the day they get there to the day they get to the firehouse. There's little variations that depending on instructors, the SMEs that are going down there. For the most part, that's why I love dealing with new recruits, fresh, no training. We're molding them the way we want them, you know, to the way they put their gear on. The habits aren't there. And when they get to the firehouse, they should be ready to go. And then for the most part, when we're talking about the way things are done, DC is four different fire departments, four different shifts with seven different battalions, all doing things their own way. So I kind of also embrace when someone says, we're going to show you the way we do it, between running a 150 pre-connected to 200. I think that's great. And that brings it, you know, they're going to just dive in more. And it sparks questions from like, well, why are we running a 150 to a 200? And then they really get to think, well, this is our area. this is, we have a 150 because the row house is right off of the street, or we run a 200 because of this situation. And that's what I like about the, we're going to show you the right way to do it. And most of the time it's that first call. You're going to know whether they're trained or not. If they're getting in and they're quick getting their gear on, everything's right, you know, you have an easy job in the firehouse. Everything else is going to fall in the line. So I kind of get, you know, standoffish when I hear we're going to, you know, show you the right way to do it. And then you get guys that are not putting their gear on for that automatic alarm or throwing ladders for a food on the stove. That's what I kind of worry about. And luckily in DC, it's right from the get-go. It's, we try to do it the right way all the time. Sometimes there's a, you know, there's long nights, but it's just keeping that mentality is really the key, is keeping them focused on the right way to do it as soon as they get out of the academy. Because that's realistically, that's where the bad habits are going to be, in that firehouse, not from the academy. So we need to make sure they're doing the right thing as soon as they get there, all the way through the probation.
Love it. Awesome. Thank you for that. So Brian, kind of the same question, you know, how does that look for you on your end in terms of like making the street meet the training and vice versa? And how do you to maximize that?
So actually it was interesting. So I took over this job as the assistant chief of Kirkwood about 2.5 years ago. And prior to that, everything that the new employee came on the job with was all EMS based. So everything was paramedic skills, and really the fire side of it was kind of a, you know, a second note, if you will. It was really focused on that. So we took a different approach to it. And so we've created a task book now for all new employees. It's kind of their guide for the first year. And it includes everything from pulling lines to forcing doors, ventilation tactics, throwing ladders, getting the stuff off the trucks, going through those sort of things, as well as certain buildings that are key in our city that the captains have identified. And so it's become more of a collaborative team effort. So, you know, get the captains, hey, what do you guys want to see in this book? What do you think is important for the guys to, that new employee to actually see and do? As well as the stuff that, you know, we have to require, you know, you got to be able to pull a line, you got to be able to put your SCBA on, go through the writ bags, the standard stuff that, you know, validated in the academy, but we want to make sure that, you know, if something were to go awry, they're familiar with our equipment as well. So that's where we found success. And it's not just a checkbox system of, hey, you did it once and do it, but it's once they gain proficiency, then they get signed off on it. Obviously some of the stuff is checked, like, you know, they walk through a nursing facility or one of our high rise facilities or something like that. But that's really helped us out to take the, you know, academy recruit that's coming straight off the 14 week academy and making sure that they're proficient when they hit Kirkwood after a year.
All right. Great summary. So back to Nick, what's going on? And the same thing with you. I mean, you got a large organization and larger than most of ours. So again, consistency, making things that are standardized. How do you do that in your neck of the woods? How does the training they get match up with what the guys are teaching in the field?
That's a good question. So we are a rather large organization, and we have a mix of, you know, of those in the field that that do things a certain way or may have been taught a certain way 20 years ago, and that's the way they still do it because that's what they were taught 20 years ago. And when these new recruits, now probationary firefighters, hit the field, they're doing things that these people have never seen before. So one of the things that we realized if we wanted to truly address this problem, and we did, was that we need to bring in line what we're teaching in the academy to what we're teaching to the guys in operations through our in-service training. So we are blessed in the fact that I have my own recruit cadre of instructors that do recruit training, as well as I have in-service training captains that focus on doing training for units in operations. I needed to get them in line first, or they needed to get in line first and make sure that we're teaching the same thing. And through in-service training and recruit training, we're starting to meet in the middle. The next biggest thing is communication. So we have probationary development officers that sole purpose or their job function is to mentor, monitor the probationary firefighters throughout their probationary year. They are the advocates for the probationary firefighters, and they have good communications with the officer and set the expectations of that precepting officer that is responsible for the probationary firefighter on the truck, what the expectation is. Of course, everywhere you go, that's, you know, maybe you look, we're going to teach you a trick, we're going to teach you a shortcut, we're going to teach you a different way to do it. That's fine, but we need to focus on the basics first. We need to master the basics, then we can start building upon that. And that's one of the conversations that these PDOs, these probation development officers, have with the frontline officers that are supervising these newer firefighters. With the understanding that they were taught a certain way, they were evaluated a certain way, and we want to continue to evaluate them throughout the probationary year to make sure that they're not going backwards, that they're moving forward. We did the best we could with the time we had in 14 weeks, but once we release them, you know, they're out in the wild. They're going to be exposed to a number of different ways to do things, characters, people with character that are definitely going to influence from there. So the PDOs are also their advocates. If their officer is not doing their job, my PDO officers, you know, have that conversation with that officer to make sure that they're doing what they need to do, make sure that they're drilling with them, that they're filling out their rookie books, and giving them the guidance. And if they have any questions, that officer knows they can call their direct PDO probation development officer to get those questions answered. If they pull the hose a certain way and they understand why they did it that way, they know who to call to find out, hey, why they do it this way? Oh, because it's the way we taught. That's the expectation. Oh, okay. Now we're on the same page, and now they're getting the additional training that they need to get where they need to be.
That's a great response. And a couple of things you mentioned that kind of spoke to me that I wanted to kind of just enhance on. You mentioned probies showing up into operations, showing that some of these old timers things they've never seen before. And that triggered something. And I remember, and I'm sure people after the same experiences, where when these probies hit the road, that's probably one of the best ways for the senior folks to see what's being done in training with what they're getting. Hey, what you covered? Show me how to do that. And they kind of are teaching the senior folk what's being taught in training. Is that a perfect world? No. I know that internally we had that happen several years ago. This is back when I was in training, where, you know, there was a disconnect. In other words, you know, they were seeing things that they weren't sure why we were doing things. Why is this hose load being pulled? What's going on here? So one of the things we started doing, and it's being heavily done right now, is making sure the content that we are delivering is the same content that we're delivering through on-the-job training for regular units, for people that are just standard yearly training. So the same way they're pulling a hose in the field that's being taught now is the same way they're doing it in the academy. So when they come out, it's the same right there. And the other thing we found that worked internally was making sure that the officers, because the officers have that massive influence. The captains and lieutenants, they have that massive amount of influence, especially during that first year. We give them as much support as possible. How does that look? Whether it's through the online system, where we're showing a bunch of task books, like you were saying, or videos, like a video of every single skill that we're going to be testing them on. Hey, officer so-and-so, lieutenant so-and-so, this is the skill they're being taught on, not just on a sheet, but this is what we want to see. And it's in with the coordination between training and ops, it's still real world. So not only is it real world, what they should expect anyway, this is exactly how they're going to be tested on. And as you mentioned, if you want to tweak it, that's fine. We understand. We're being communicative. We're being intentional to tell you this is how we're testing them, and this is how they're going to be scored. So I would train them appropriately. Luckily, the training a lot of times does match real world application. And I wanted to also kind of do something that you mentioned before, Brian. And I like that you did this in terms of a task book. We also mentioned identifying buildings and kind of focusing on your first do. That's key too. That really shows that you're taking your first do and tailoring what you're doing to meet the needs of your community, of your structures, of your of how things are constructed, the layout. That's huge too, making it very job specific. That was good. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about that entry into the fire service, that first impression we get, the fact that it's likely going to be the training officers, the training division, people that are in a training capacity, having that first impression with those malleable, those moldable rookies, cadets, boots, whatever you want to call them, and how that first impression is on us to make sure that they see that we know what we're doing, make sure that the department knows, then make sure not only do we know that we're doing, but that the department follows suit and looks good and all that kind of jazz. So going to the next step further with this, in terms of like after that initial training, they get onto the field, they're practicing, they're getting their reps in, they're getting their calls in, they're going through their task books, they're getting tested on a normal basis. When it comes close to the end of that first year, in other words, they're about to become, you know, whether your transition is probationary firefighter to rookie firefighter or cadet to just firefighter, whatever that transition is, when that first year is over and they're ready to go and kind of be, like you said, out in the wild, how do you know what makes you feel comfortable? What metrics are you using? What in your mind says to you, yes, I'm comfortable with that person. I've either seen this, I've tested them on this, some sort of data shows this, they've got tested on that. What makes you comfortable and confident that the training that was provided from day one all the way to that first year was sufficient. And Nick, I'll go back to you and we'll kind of circle around that way. So that's the question. In other words, you got that person about to get off that first year. What makes you comfortable?
All right, well, to answer the question, to get to the end, we really got to start in the beginning, if you want to look at it from that way. So, and this goes back to our probation and development officers and their job function with them throughout their year. It's them as well as their company officer. So there's documentation, there's daily evaluations, there are monthly evaluations, and that to identify areas that need to be improved upon and developing an improvement plan to get them there, as well as we bring them in. So they're doing drills with their company officers, and then we bring them in on a monthly, if not every 3-week basis. And we're evaluating them on the skills that they were taught in rookie school and identifying areas of improvement along the way, as well as written tests. And we also do PT evaluations when they start the probationary year, in the middle, and also at the end, to give them a gauge snapshot of where they are physically, if they've progressed, maintained, or have gone backwards. But all of this goes back to documentation. In the end, it's not to release or fire somebody. It's to get them where they need to be. And if they're not cutting it and they're not going to cut it, the documentation needs to reflect that. And that's where it goes back to the company officers, not pencil whipping evaluations, because it has jammed us up before, where it wasn't until their third rotation, almost fourth rotation, that we start seeing glaring problems. And when we look back, their first and second rotation, everything's fine. And that's because there was a breakdown in the system. And again, the idea is not to get somebody fired. It's to get them where they need to be. And now they're not necessarily where we need to be. And we're kind of strapped and stuck. So it goes back to communication, expectations, documentation, identifying areas of improvement, and then getting them the attention that they need to get them.
Yeah, let me jump in real quick, Nick. I know what you mean about the documentation part, because again, in my time with DC, we did have monthly evaluations of the recruits, right? That first year, that probationary year, you do a monthly evaluation. And at the 14th month and the 18th month, they come to the chief and they have a test with the chief, right? The other months, the company officer is signing off on that. And again, right, there have been times where sometimes they'll write them off during the company officer's check. It might be a 90, 95, they did good. Then when they get to the pressure of the chief and they crumble, it's tough, right? Because then you could say, well, look at these other months. Every other month he did fine. So he must just have had a bad day, right? He must have just had a bad day with the chief that day. So how can you do that? And I understand there are those things, there are those instances. So we as company officers have to have it in our, know that it's in our best interest and their best interest, to be honest, right? And not sugarcoat this thing, because it's going to be a problem. Because this job isn't for everybody. And we have to kind of keep the faith, or keep that in mind, and know that it's not. And if they can't pass it. So we shouldn't just move them on because, well, they got through rookie school.
Yeah. No, thank you for that, Nick. And a couple of things you said in there, and I think we can all agree, this level in our careers, with how long we've been on, that importance of documentation is paramount. But I think we've all probably been in some sort of situation where we maybe see that first person to actually be honest on an evaluation, because everybody else was, like you said, trying to maybe be their friend or not want to be too harsh. But in terms of clear communication, like you said, reminding those officers that, hey, we're not into discipline. It's not about disciplining or getting rid of somebody. It's about fixing a problem now, because once we sign off on them, this is a 20, 30, or 40 year investment. So we have to fix those problems now. So I'm really glad we brought up the documentation. And at least locally around here, I've seen a nice trend to where more people are taking that more seriously, where they're documenting things, not to the point where they're trying to make them look bad, but hey, I see this as deficiency. Let's work together to fix it. I see a lot more ownership in that. So I'm glad you mentioned the documentation. And in terms of performance improvement plans, I will tell you, I learned just what that was a couple of years ago. So it's one of those things that a lot of people aren't taught, because we're not very good at succession planning in the fire service sometimes. So when you get into the more things further down the road in terms of the documentation, performance improvement plans, yeah, it's not exactly something that's on everybody's first page of their binders they have in the training bureaus. And that's another note to the people listening to this podcast, the Hump Day Hangouts. Listen, we're all a wealth of information here. If anybody needs to reach out to any of us to see what our schedules are, to see how our rookie classes look, to see what our task books look like, to see what a performance improvement plan looks like, you can reach out to any of us in ISFSI, Traditions Training. We have a lot of that. So feel free to reach out to us. One thing I will say, Nick, that we started to do this just recently too, before I pass it over to Brian, is that the PT training, the performance training, the physical training, we started to do that recently as well, because we were finding that a lot of people weren't coming in physically prepared. So now we do that. We do initial training and during the course of their first few weeks, do some retesting to make sure they're physically capable to do this, because we don't want to see anybody getting hurt. And as Tony said, this job isn't for everybody. Sometimes they don't know that. And we sometimes have to make sure they understand exactly what it's talking about towards the physical side of this. So the physical side, again, we can get off another tangent with that, but it is part of the training. I'm glad you mentioned that. So going over to Brian, kind of the same thing. Coming close to the end of that year, what makes you feel comfortable that person's ready to hit that street after that first year?
So, you know, I think it's a multitude of things. Obviously, it's discussions for me with the company officer. I'm going to look for it on calls. You know, is the person being successful on calls and doing the right stuff? Am I seeing other crew members talking about that member? You know, they're like, oh, that guy's not cutting the mustard. He's not really doing what he's supposed to be doing. But you know, for me, it's really going to be a matter of that conversation. I always try to get to the end of the year, talk to those guys, say, hey, how do you feel? How do you feel you're doing? Where do you see yourself? Here's some things I've noted. But I really think, you know, to your point of the physical fitness and the things, you should start seeing reflection on calls. You know, you should see from that first day on the job where they're really not sure what's going on, a natural progression over 12 months. And, you know, I put in the call in the little notes there, but I really think that, you know, if you can get the company officers and the crew to understand that, you know, a new employee is really, it's built by a village, and the village is your company officer and that crew. And so if that new employee is successful or fail, that's a direct reflection of them. Right. So, you know, I've had company officers that have taken, you know, ownership of their guys, which is what's needed. And then you see that guy be a great 20 right there. Exactly. Right. So it is. So, you know, take ownership of their people and make sure it's not, you know, understanding that this guy is not just with me for a year, but he's with the organization for 30 years. And so, you know, some guys don't see that. And so making sure that is well known to them early on, I think is absolutely critical. So.
I think you kind of answered this question, but I'm going to do a follow-up question with you. But I think you kind of answered it. You mentioned you talked to your officer, you talked to the crew, kind of get that pulse of things, that informal kind of, hey, what's going on? Do you find that sometimes that talk doesn't match the written part of it? And if so, how do you tackle that?
So, yeah, absolutely. So we do sort of like what Tony was talking about. We have evaluations for them. So during their first 3 months, they get an evaluation every rotation. We do 40-hour shifts. So every rotation, they're getting an evaluation. And then after that, they go with monthly evaluations. So I'll take those evaluations, you know, and our deputy chief EMS does a lot of this, and compare what they're saying now to those evaluations. And either they're going to be drastically like, well, this guy drastically improved, or stayed about the same, or was way off. And so that documentation then either supports that conversation being correct or incorrect.
Okay. Thank you for that. Passing over to Ray, same question. You got to get that person, they're coming up on their year. What makes you comfortable that person's ready to go on their own?
So I think the biggest thing, and go back to what Tony Carroll was saying about that probationer may have performed well through every test, whether it's the officer just signing off or they really did well, and then they get to the chief's evaluation, or whether you have a jurisdiction that has a review officer and they look shaky. That could be a real thing. I think the best way to judge it is feedback from other officers, firefighters, on actual incidents, whether it's a fire or a hazmat or a medical call, of watching that employee do their job. We had a fire the other night, and probationer on the line, perfect stretch, top floor apartment fire, not a kink every turn. And a lot of people just, you know, oh, it was a great fire. Didn't really pick up on it. Like, this was a probationer that may have struggled with some things in the firehouse, may have not, but when it came down to it, everything was by the book, perfect. And I think that's what a lot of jurisdictions miss out on. Like, they're failing some of the things in the firehouse, but when it comes down to the job, they are excelling past our standards. And I think that's the true test, is that person can knows what they're doing, can problem solve, and has critical thinking outside of that. And that's the true test.
I think you're 100% right. We could test them and train them all day, but having that field boots in the ground experience, seeing them on actual incidents, doing what needs to be done, like you said, pulling a hose right or whatever else the metric is, that's where we know we're comfortable. So I like that you answered that way, because that's truly, I think we can all agree, when they're able to perform on scene as they did in training, we're comforted. We're like, they got it. Awesome. We're good. I know that person who pulled the line. I don't have to watch them. I know it. So I'm glad you went that route. Tony, kind of the same question. What are your thoughts on this?
I really felt, again, in my last job, I really felt that if the company officer is going to call me up and say, hey, he's ready for the test, that means he's ready for the test, right? I mean, I had really good company officers at most of the places. So they knew, right? Don't waste the time to test this guy if he's not ready. And I think that was the biggest thing, right? That they knew, they worked with them. They understood my expectations. Previous tests, I mean, it's going to be a long day that we're going to be out there testing on these things. Let's not waste anybody's time if the guy's not ready. So I really think that that's where it starts, is the company trains them, right? Gets them ready. And then they put them forth. And I think I can trust them, because I had a really good relationship with the company officers.
I think that we've had conversations on company officers and the importance of the role and everything, including obviously training, and you hit the nail on the head when it's reminding them, not that they need to be reminded, but just the importance they have in that influence and their words. Like you said, if they say they're ready to go, okay, copy. More importantly, if they're not, well, please bring that to us. What do we need to do to make sure we fix that so they are ready? That's 100%.
It's tough too, right? I think I'll go back to what Ray said the very first thing. I mean, you can make or break a kid depending on where you send them, right? I mean, I don't know about Miami-Dade. It's a big place. Your place too is a big place. But there's places out there that if this rookie goes, he might be on his own, you know? Otherwise, conversely, you send him places where he's going to be set for his career because it's a great company. And I mean, that's a tough, that was the quandary you're in when you're, you know, assigning people to assignments. Is we want to screw this kid, or we want to set him up for success?
Yeah, 100%. And because, like I said before, that first year you're setting this person up after that for the rest of their career, which could be a quarter of a century, 30 years, long time. You got to make that first impression count. So as we're coming close to the top of the hour here, just some final thoughts, and I'll just give one before I pass it on to you guys. But you know, in terms of what we've talked about, I'm looking back, and again, I always think about this as their first impression. That first year, not on the first day, but the first year with us and the training they get, and you know, some successes that have worked out here, and being the training chair for a while, talking to the other trainers in the county and the tri-county area in Southeast Florida, it seems like a lot of things that were working for us, working for other people. That communication and coordination between the trainers or the training bureau or training division and operations to make sure things are somewhat similar or the same. So there's standardization. So there's not the training of calling back and going, what are you doing over there? Why? What's a Cleveland load? What's a file? What is this? So there's that communication to start off on the right foot. What's worked is, again, supporting the officers. You mentioned the officers. Well, if you want them to do good, you want to make sure you support them. And that's not only trusting their judgment, but providing them all the information they need so they can see what's being done, how to properly assess them, and so on and so forth. And then, again, what we've realized down here, I mentioned it again, is that whole the mentoring. And Nick, I think that the position you mentioned before is kind of in a mentoring role, that position that you mentioned that looks after those new employees. It's basically a mentoring role. And it seems as if, again, with everything we're asking for these employees, if everything they're doing now is not the same as it was 20 years ago. It's not the same as it was 25 years ago. They have so much more on their plates now. So it's almost as if, and people that are listening to this, maybe you're at that realization too, you need some sort of mentorship type program. Some sort of program to make sure you're finding out what their needs are, how to balance that, not only in terms of training, but everything else going on in their lives that first year to set them up for failure. Or success, that is. So I'm glad we talked about it. And also in terms of what we talked about before, You can always go back to some of the recent editions of Hump Day Hangout. We've covered mentoring extensively. So please, if you're listening to this and you really want to dive into that, reach back out to those. And then if you have more questions, you can reach out to this group. And we can definitely have those conversations because it's that important these days. But as we're kind of wrapping things up here, going back, final thoughts of the, you know, that first year of training. And Tony, I'll start with you and I'll go back to Nick before the end. But any final thoughts in that first year of that firefighter training?
No, again, my new place here the first year is, you know, it's going to be important, again, to get them going. They may have already got some training in there, but this is a pretty, they're going to get thrown in, and there's not really a rookie year because, you know, we're going out with two guys on an engine, and the driver operator, and it might be that new guy who's that second person. So hopefully they pick something up, you know, on the runs they're going on. And, you know, and we can get some going with maybe a task book and something like that to kind of ensure that we're making sure that each shift is working on the same thing with these new people. So, I mean, hopefully, you know, it'll check back with me in a couple months and we'll see how we're moving on preparing this. So we have some consistency as we get these new people in and we're making sure that we are giving them what they need and what we need too.
Gotcha. All right. Ray, what are your final thoughts on what we talked about today, that first year of that firefighter?
I think I want to go back to what I said in the beginning. It all starts not so much at the academy level, but in the firehouse. I think the biggest thing is to everyone needs to be critical of themselves and critical of maybe that mentor you have. We all falter sometimes and not our at our highest level. And we need to point that out. Usually when these firehouses are getting these probationers, it's not a secret. So I've told guys before, hey, you're getting a probationer, you know, we're getting one at our company. Let's get all on the same page. You know, the crew might not be to their highest standard. Let's start training, getting ready for them. And then it kind of just continue that path, you know, let that snowball build up speed and size as it goes down that hill of training. And by the time they're done probation, everyone is one unit. I think that's the best way to start it. So, you know, just keep it in the firehouse.
I hear it. I like where you're going with that. Brian, kind of finishing up, final thoughts on this.
Yeah, I always go back to this and it's, you know, a saying I like to say is the basics are the basics, but the basics aren't easy. And it's about basic training. And, you know, sometimes in the fire service, it's hard. Because those guys, those new employees are coming to a 20 or 25 year guy that's ready to go to the tech rescue stuff or dive in all that stuff. And so, you know, just because you're training on that stuff and you got a new guy you're dragging into it, it does no good to have that new guy that can, you know, set up a Z rig or tie off a Stokes basket, but has no idea how to pull a line because that's what you want to train on. So kind of put yourself in that mindset early on as you get a new employee that, hey, listen, this guy's not up to my speed and I'm only as quick as my slowest guy. And if that slowest guy is your new guy, that's as quick as you can be. So focus on the basics for that first year. Make sure that new employee is focused on those skill sets that are good for a foundation for a firefighter. And, you know, hopefully you'll have success with that guy over a 30-year career.
So those are wise words. Before I kick it over to Nick, I'll say that a lot of our newer folk, they want to get involved with technical rescue, hazmat, all that jazz. That's wonderful. Finish your first year. Focus on the basics. Become a good firefighter. Become a good basic employee. Know those basics. Your ground level, your baseline is strong, and then build upon that. So if they start jumping ahead, there's chances are there might falter some cracks in that foundation, which may lead to failures later on. So I'm glad you brought that up. So Nick, I'll finish it off with you, man. Last thoughts here.
All right, so real quick, one quick go back on a comment from Chief Carroll a little earlier. If you have any say or influence on where new probationary firefighters end up in your organization, on what truck and what officers, absolutely do that if you can. It'll go a lot further to help set that new probationary firefighter up for success. Talk to the recruit instructors. They know these recruits or these probationary firefighters better than anyone. They spent time with them. They know their personalities. They know who can thrive in certain areas and who may need a little more help. And you know your go-to officers, if there's availability on their truck, to put them because they know they're going to be able to give them the intention that they need to get them where they need to be, as opposed to just being thrown into the system and possibly fall through the cracks and get through and get lost in the system. So You know your know your recruits, your probationary firefighters, know your people, know your officers. And if you have any say in where you put them, please put that influence in there. It'll do better by them to get them where they need to be for the long term of the organization. As it comes to final thoughts, in the end, there's an intangible, thing here that, we can do the best job that we can for that new probationary firefighter. But to a certain extent, it does go back on them. We can provide them the best training, the best opportunities to train, the best officers to train with, opportunity to grow themselves. But in the end, they have to do it. And that part goes back to what I said in the very beginning. When it comes to recruit training, we have for us 14 weeks to really test their commitment for their to be behind this organization and committed to be the best firefighter that they can be at the end of the academy, at the end of probationary year, and at retirement. And they have to have that commitment. And our job is to do the best that we can to afford them the best opportunity for them to fulfill that commitment. So to a certain extent, it does go back on them to be the best firefighter that they possibly could be. And it's our job to provide them the opportunity.
Nick, that's a phenomenal way to wrap up this conversation. I think you hit the nail on the head. You summarize everything very good. You put it back on the employee that part of this is their responsibility. 100%. Absolutely. We can only do so much. And even if we put together the perfect system with no holes, the boat's totally watertight, it all relies on that person's ability to want to be here and to want to take on that challenge. 100%. I will say one last
thing. We can't want it more than them.
Great way to sum this all up. I will say that I like what you said about knowing your people, knowing your fire officers, and reaching out to them and knowing your rookies. It's that communication aspect. It shows that you care. It shows that you're talking to that. And it makes sure that bond between admin and training and the operations folks are still talking to one another, not separate. So by reaching out and having that dialogue is huge. So listen, it's the top of the hour. We made it just under 1 hour. This has been a phenomenal conversation, as these usually are. So I wanted to thank everybody for offering their insight, offering their 2 cents on what that first year looks like, giving their best practices, giving their ideas of how they make it work in their neck of the woods. It's been a good conversation. To the people out there listening, remember, this is just one of many different Hump Day Hangouts where we covered a variety of different topics on training. We're here every month, first Wednesday of the month, on fire engineering, talking about training on all aspects of things. But I hope you enjoyed it. Gentlemen, it was great talking with you guys. And to the people out there, we'll see you all soon. Have a wonderful day and be safe.